Yo, 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 Thought Warriors, what is up? Higher Learning is on. It is I, Van Lathan Jr.
And it's me, Rachel Lynn Lindsay.
Rachel is in here coughing, guys.
Don't do that. Why are you always bringing information that happened outside the podcast into the top of the show? Stop telling my business.
I'm just making sure that everybody knows that we still got to keep Rachel covered in prayer.
Keep
Rachel covered in prayer.
I receive that.
We have a very fascinating interview coming up later. We told you guys that we'd have Tamika Hamilton on. She is a black lady Republican. That's quite a saucy bitch. She's running for Congress out of the 6th District up there in Sacramento. She's going to be joining us. We're going to talk. We talked about it all. We talked about the police. We talked about CRT.
We did. We talked about Joe Biden. Police reform. Did you say that?
Oh, I said police.
This is a great conversation because we have said, how many times on this podcast have we said we are going to bring in a conservative voice? Guess what, guys? The day is here. We finally did.
We brought in Camille, and you didn't like Camille. You rolled your eyes.
I roll my eyes all the time.
That's so crazy when people say stuff like that.
I roll my eyes all the time.
Donnie, did Rachel not just roll her eyes when I brought up Camille?
Yeah, you did.
You rolled your eyes. Donnie, you don't like Camille.
Done. Be Trudy, honest. Help. Help, Trudy.
She didn't roll her eyes. Y'all lying. Don't
worry. Oh, come on.
All right. Get out of here. Both of you. Shut your mics off. Producers, don't talk.
Camille grew on me by the end of the podcast. He grew up, and I told him.
Yeah, then he hit us with the "I'm not black" thing, and that's what I was gonna say.
We promised a black conservative, and Camel, according to him, is not black. So you know, we welcome this voice, Tamika Hamilton.
All right, so we got to clean up a couple of things real quick in terms of like the fallout from Trudy's Corner last week.
What happened? I thought people were happy to understand Trudy a little bit better, and the root of the reason why she thinks she does about certain men.
Now, see, people not fucking with that. People don't like the idea that Trudy is saying all of this stuff that she's saying just because one guy hurt her. Trudy, I know you can hear me. You can jump back on. Now everyone knows. You know what I mean? Everyone knows that comes from a place of hurt, you know?
Doesn't it always?
Yeah. You guys ever see Rushmore? Did you ever see that movie?
Come on now.
Trudy, did you see Rushmore?
No.
Donnie, did you see Rushmore?
Yeah, Rushmore is a classic.
Okay, Rushmore is a fucking classic. I don't understand how y'all just like never saw Rushmore.
We are drawing a line on this podcast. It's you and Donnie versus me and Trudy.
I don't understand how you just, whatever.
Rushmore's I've never even heard of it.
Me either.
It's a Wes Anderson movie. It's got Bill Murray in it. It's good. Jason Schwartzman. Rushmore is a very good movie. Have you guys seen this?
This is Higher Learning, not the rewatchables.
Have you seen any Wes Anderson movie?
Rachel. Perhaps, but I wouldn't know.
Have you seen The Royal Tenenbaums?
I've seen pieces.
Pieces of The Royal Tenenbaums. Have you seen, I know you haven't seen Bottle Rocket. Have you seen, I know you didn't see The Life Aquatic. You don't see his movies. You don't know Russ. You live a whole life and Russ Anderson just doesn't fucking matter to you.
Similar to the way Trudy has a reason as to why she thinks the way she does about men, I have a reason as to why I've never seen any movies. I was not allowed to.
It's true. The judge. Okay. Anyway, in Rushmore, Jason Schwartzman plays a kid who puts on all of these plays, right? And they're really elaborate, like crazy plays that he bases them off like movies. He'll like do, you know, like Rambo the play, but they'll do it at school. He's like, he does everything well except for go to school. And there's this Scottish kid that has his arm in the cast that's always picking on him, right? It's always fucking with him. And at the end of the movie, you know, they go back and forth the whole time, you know. And at the end of the movie, he goes to him and he gives him a script and says, I think this role is for you. And then he looks up and he goes, I've always wanted to be in one of your fucking plays, you know. And then the whole movie, your shit changes because you realize that everything that this guy was doing was out of hurt.
I got you.
You thought that he had a point, right? You thought that it was going on, but it was all just coming from a place of hurt. I thought Trudy had really salient points on love and dating. But now I know it only exists because some nigga hurt you.
Okay.
Like that's what happened, Trudy. Let's keep it gangster.
I really just have to say though, so the boy that I was referring to, that is my villain and my villain origin story. I will admit that. He was not deficient in the hair department. Like he didn't even wear hats. He actually had locks. So
was this, were people upset about this? Did this
No, what the hell are you talking about? But, what does that matter?
My whole villain origin story is based off of not liking men that wear hats. And I feel like people were equating the two.
What people were saying was that you used to be someone who went into a relationship seeking mutual sharing with an open heart. And now a nigga can't even wear a fucking Yankee hat around you.
That's not true. Trudy's just raised her standards. That's not true.
Okay, period.
Okay. All right.
It's okay. We all change. We all grow, Trudy. It's right. Okay.
Let you guys know.
For everybody. And that's that.
Trudy's Corner isn't going anywhere.
Let them know, man.
That part.
We'll be back on Monday. I've seen more people sending stuff to the
Reddit. I had a good Trudy's Corner question, and I really wanted to know. Can I ask this question?
Oh, of course you can. Like, yeah.
Okay. I don't know if we were going to save it. I don't know if we were going to save this for Monday. Okay. This is really for you, Trudy, because you're out in the dating world, unlike me, Donnie, and Van. Hold on. I wrote this down because I could not believe this. I was talking to a friend, and she was telling me that her friend is on the dating apps and she's dating people, and she is always concerned whether or not the guy that she is dating might be a part of the LGBTQ+ community. Okay.
This is problematic already. Off to a bad start.
So she asked the guy on a date flat out if he was gay. Is that okay? Is that allowed? Is that what people do?
Flat out.
To his face on a date. And she said, are you gay? And is it okay for guys to do that too? Van's face. What is the Van's face right now?
Where the fuck are we at? Like, what do you know, nigga? You can't do that. What's wrong with y'all?
I'm not saying it's okay. I'm obviously not saying it's okay. My point is, I was shocked that people are doing this. So I'm like, is this a thing? Is this what people do now? Like, I think if you feel a certain way, you should just not go on a date with someone. Why would you sit there, go on a date with somebody, and then flat out ask them the question? Is this what people are doing now?
I just want to point out that some of the thought warriors think I'm crazy. Let the record show. There are people that are far crazier than I am. I would never. And yeah. It's like, I just would never. I just feel like that's like not appropriate. And like, if that was a problem for them, if they didn't want to date somebody that was part of that community or that was bi or whatever, because that is a discussion that a lot of women have, whether or not they feel comfortable dating a man that's bi. And I guess maybe guys also have that conversation. I don't know. But I would never. What? I don't know.
What?
And this should be vice versa. Is it okay?
Wait, hold on. You guys are so precious. You guys are saying that guys have a conversation.
I don't know if
about
they do.
Whether or not, hold on. This is hilarious. That guys would have a conversation about whether or not it's a turnoff if your girl likes girls.
No, I don't think that that's what Trudy was saying.
You just said maybe guys have the conversation about whether or not they would date somebody that's bi.
I don't know.
Trudy, we don't. As a matter of fact, it opens up a whole new realm of possibilities.
Right, but I have a friend that had a similar situation like that, not the male but the female. I'm friends with both of them, and he wasn't comfortable with it actually. So I don't know if it goes both ways.
All right.
Well, yeah, you're assuming.
I would never ask. And if I did have those feelings, and if it was a problem for me, then I feel like I would probably need to check myself.
Right. I just thought it was extremely disrespectful. And I thought, is this what people are, is that okay? An okay question to ask these days? Like they did it. And apparently they do it all the time.
Do it all the time.
Oh, are they?
See? Hurt.
Are they black?
Hurt.
Yes, they're black. Yes, they're black.
All this is coming from a place of hurt. Trudy's Corner is going to be on fire now. Now everybody's going to be asking that question. Okay. We are going to get into the podcast, but first we're going to take a little break.
This episode is brought to you by Hyundai. You could be doing anything this week, right? You've got work, errands, friends, and a whole lot of fun in between. That's why the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the capable SUV that's built for your life. With premium interiors, available wireless charging, and room for your whole cargo and crew. Okay, Hyundai. Visit HyundaiUSA.com to learn more about the all-new 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe.
Okay. Joe Biden is once again in a corner. Joe Biden stays in the corner longer than Jake LaMotta. Do you know who that is, Rachel?
No.
That's funny.
What's the last name? Oh, I figured it was Jake a boxer. LaMotta.
Boxer from a movie. Yeah, so Joe Biden has pledged to appoint a black woman to the Supreme Court. He did that back in a long time ago. But now he might have to put his money where his mouth is because Justice Stephen Breyer is planning to retire. And black people looking at President Biden like, hey, you better deliver. You said you wanted a black woman on the Supreme Court. There might be the opportunity for a black woman to be on the Supreme Court. So a couple questions from this. Number one, The backlash is coming from this. A lot of people like the Candace Owens of the world are saying that justice should not be picked based upon race. That's not what he said. What he said was he would look for a qualified woman to put her on the court. Number two, people are balking about whether or not Biden will stick to this pledge. Do you think that he will? And if he does, how far does that go with you in terms of his presidency not being a complete waste of time?
Well, here's mine. I thought, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I thought he has since come out, since Justice Breyer came out and said that, I thought he has since now confirmed that he will definitely nominate a black woman for that seat. Donnie,
he said it before.
I know he said it before, right. But I thought he has since definitely confirmed that that's exactly what he plans on doing. Is that correct, Donnie?
Yeah, he did. He had a press conference today where he reiterated that point.
Okay, so he's going to do it. So the first part of the question is moot. The second part of the question is, how far does that go with you?
I mean, I think it's fantastic. It's obviously long overdue. When you think about it, how has a black woman not been able to sit in that seat at this point? Listen, it's a positive step, right? But it doesn't make me forget other promises that were made. What I want from Biden is, if he says he's going to do it, I want to see him do it, or at least make a huge attempt to try to make it happen. So this is one of the things that he said he would do if he was able to under his presidency. Great, he said he was going to do it. I'm not going to stop there. I'm still waiting for you to do other things. But thank you for following through with that promise, right?
Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. I don't want to get skewered for this.
Don't say it means nothing. It depends how you're making that comment. Please explain.
So this is why. Okay, so if the Supreme Court is what now? 6-3, right?
It's 6-3.
Justice Breyer is one of the liberals, right?
Yes.
So you replace a liberal with a liberal. The court remains 6-3.
Still 6-3.
So that means anything functional that the court can do is not changed because there is still a huge conservative majority.
Correct. Okay.
One of the things that is important for the growth of Black America is the move past symbolism. So the reason why I relitigate Obama's presidency all the time is because what I really want to know is, let me make my little problematic case. What I really want to know is, what did Obama do for Black people? That's really what I want to know. Like, what actually happens is kind of what I want to know. It's very important that there's a Black Supreme Court, Black female Supreme Court justice. It means something. It means something. It just don't mean actually anything. It means something. It means a lot in the symbolic realm. But it means, at this point, if we're just being honest and looking at it realistically, it means absolutely nothing.
Wow.
In the realm of actual governance and things that actually need to happen, because it's not a consequential choice for the Supreme Court. It's like a it You know what I mean? I don't know how to say this. Like, it's not consequential choice.
It doesn't change the dynamic of the court.
It changes really nothing.
It's still a conservative court. Things that go like affirmative action, potentially abortion. No, having a Black woman there does not change the way that that court is more than likely going to vote. Absolutely. But the reason that it's so problematic for you to say nothing, just for that, those words to even come out of your mouth, even if you're only speaking in regards to the dynamic of the court, is because representation does mean something for a I'm sorry, it does, because it might not mean something in the moment as far as it's going to change the way the court makes decisions. But for people who are coming up, for people who see themselves, I'm sorry, I strongly believe this, for people who see themselves say, hey, I can do that, or hey, I'm going to remember her in the future, it might change something. Like, I get it. Your frustration is what Biden's doing isn't going to change anything right now, but you can't take away from the fact that something that has never been done is going to happen. And it also shows that Biden promised something and he's making an attempt to deliver on it. You can't take that away from it too. Sure, but I can't sit here and say, well, okay, in the grand scheme of things, it's really nothing because the court's still going to decide the same way. History is about to be made, and it's history for somebody who looks like me.
I understand, and I am trying my best to talk about this with the lightest touch that I can. But the reality is this. If this selection buys Joe Biden any goodwill for the African American.
I don't know.
If this selection buys Joe Biden any goodwill from the Black community, it's a shame. It's a shame that it does. It really is.
Because the
justice, we got to stop with the feel good shit. I got to be honest with you. Rachel, I'm agreeing that this is significant.
Yes, I get you.
I'm agreeing. It was significant when they put Clarence Thomas on there. Well, not really, because he was the second, but it was still significant.
It was significant to
have,
to the other side.
Well, no, it was significant to. Well, no, it was still significant to have a Black member to the Supreme Court. It's significant.
I'm sorry. Now that I will disagree with, because
why?
Been done, and he no. It's so disrespectful that Clarence Thomas took Thurgood Marshall's seat.
Replacing
a Black with a Black.
Well, having a Black member of the Supreme Court is better than having an all white Supreme Court, right? But listen. If you're saying that having Clarence Thomas as a Black member of the Supreme Court actually doesn't mean anything because Clarence Thomas doesn't have any policies or doesn't believe any ideology that could actually change anything for Black people, you're kind of making my argument right now. And the reason why I'll say that is because what I'm saying is having a Black woman on the Supreme Court, sure, it's symbolically meaningful, but in the grand scheme of things, it just doesn't mean very much right now. And I think that it would be a shame if when it was time for us to decide on whether or not we're still caucusing with the Democrats wholesale and giving them a free pass, we say, well, he did put a Black woman on the Supreme Court. I get it. But at the same time, where are we on voting rights? Where are we on the Build Back Better plan? Where are we on the Justice and Policing Act? Where are we on any of the things that we're supposed to get better?
And is anybody giving Biden a pass just because he says he's going to follow through? I don't think so.
There's a danger that some people will, though.
Okay,
that's what I'm speaking to.
I don't think that that's majority, but you're right. Sure, somebody will say it. And here's my question to you. If this court was 6-3 in the other way, and you were replacing on the sick side, it's a liberal side, and you were replacing that person with a Black woman, would you have the same argument? Would you still say it doesn't mean anything?
No. What I'm saying is, what I'm saying is over. Oh, is that an Amber Alert? Yeah, Amber Alert. Did it go off on your phone?
Did not.
Wait a minute. So that means the phone people don't think you give a fuck about kids. I'm going to be honest with you. The Amber Alert went off. Missing or dangerous kids.
Can you turn off Amber Alert?
If you turned off the Amber Alert on your phone.
I'm literally asking, can you? Which means that I didn't do it.
You didn't get the alert.
Well, I'm not in the same place as you care. Either. I'm not they in the same place as you.
You ain't that far. I could walk to your crib. Like I could walk to your crib. They didn't send you the Amber Alert. You should ask. Why am I not getting the alerts? Why wouldn't Rachel get an Amber Alert? That's really crazy. You didn't
get Trudy, did your phone go off?
Trudy, no. did your phone go off, Trudy? See, they know I'm the only person that cares about kids on this whole podcast. Anyway, look, my point is this.
I'm glad you care about kids because you don't care about black women.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Here we go.
Look,
it's historic. It's monumental. It's amazing. Whatever adjective that you want to put to it, it's all of that, but it's just not very consequential right now.
Correct.
That's all I'm saying.
But I will say, putting the first black woman liberal on the Supreme Court is not like when Clarence Thomas took over Thurgood Marshall. It's not the same thing.
It's not the same thing.
Oh my gosh, they are turned off.
You turned them off.
They are turned off.
Whoa. You really don't give a fuck about kids.
I didn't even know you could do that.
I'm not going to lie, man.
Somebody did it. Somebody did it.
I'm not going to lie. What you mean somebody did it? It's your phone.
I must have reset the settings on my phone.
She turned off the Amber Alerts on her phone.
That probably
means all y'all turned off the Amber Alerts on your phone. You can learn a lot about a person, about whether or not they have the Amber Alerts. So there are a bunch of women who are in contention for this. Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, California Supreme Court Judge Leandra Kruger, South Carolina U.S. District Judge J. Michelle Childs, lawyer Sherilyn Eiffel. I've heard of her before. I wonder why. North Carolina Supreme Court Associate Justice Anita Earls. Minnesota District Judge Wilhelmina Mimi Wright, Eunice Lee from the Second Circuit Court, and the Seventh Circuit Court Judge Candace Jackson Akwumi. Akwumi. I don't know. It's very, very important. Very important to see. So we'll see what happens with that. Real quick, there's an all black group of kids that are going to climb Mount Everest.
Oh.
Have you seen this?
I did.
This is the group, they call themselves Full Circle. They're a group of black climbers and mountaineers.
Great.
This is what they say. They say it's an expedition that is certainly about climbing. It's also about spending time in the mountains, but it's also about building community, global community, and it's about changing the narrative for the black community, particularly the United States, and how we interact with outdoor spaces, says Rosemary Saul, a member of Full Circle.
Great.
I've never been more desperate to talk to a group of black people.
What's the first question you would have for them, Van?
Why?
It's why. Well, if I'm piggybacking on what I said before, it's all about representation.
Do we need to be represented on Mount Everest?
I'm just kidding.
Mount Everest is a white place. It's both white and the people who climb it, and it's actually white. No, and I'm okay with that.
We're not going to knock Full Circle. If they want to normalize black climbers, God knows I would never, never participate. That's not my thing. It's not my hobby. I'm not that daring. I'm not daring enough. But if they want to normalize it, that's great. Maybe climbing changed their life. Maybe it's therapeutic for them. And maybe they want to spread that message for other people. Good for them. Full Circle.
They're being respectful to the local Sherpas and the people that are up there when you're climbing. Because I saw this thing when you're climbing up Mount Everest, you climb up there and there are people that help you out when you're climbing up there.
I did not know that.
Yeah, they help you out when you're climbing up to the top of the
summit. You've already started the research.
Well, it's not true. You're right. I saw this movie and the movie was called Everest. Oh. You ever seen that movie? Of course you haven't seen it.
Thank you. You
haven't seen the movie Everest, but it's actually about some people that got fucked up when they tried to climb up there. Because you can get fucked up.
That happens a lot, though, I feel like.
Yeah. And see, that's my point. My point is, we don't really have niggas to spare in terms of... You know what I'm saying? White people can go up there.
and risk their lives.
And they can climb up Mount Everest. You know what I'm saying? Like, they got their own country. Like, you know, they can climb up Mount Everest. I don't feel like we can spare. We can't spare people up there getting frostbite and shit like that. You know what I'm saying? For no reason. But go for it. That's fine. All right. We'll take a break. On the other side of this break, we're going to give you our interview with California Congress candidate, Republican, conservative, black lady, Tamika Hamilton, right on this other side of this break. Okay. So, thought warriors, you know, we're liberals. You know that we're liberals. We talk about it every single day, how liberal we are, the liberalists of the liberally. But we also did tell you that we were going to make a very conscious decision to make sure that we give conservative voices, particularly black conservative voices, some space on Higher Learning. Earlier this week, we talked to my great friend, Bakari Sellers, and Rachel's great friend, host of the Bakari Sellers podcast here on the Ringer Network. And he is a liberal Democrat, always have been. But it was brought to my attention that there's somebody that I might want to have a conversation with my good friend, Kenny Hamilton, earlier this week. And that is Tamika Hamilton, who is a black woman who is running for Congress out of the 6th District of California. There is a huge gulf right now, it seems like, between liberals and conservatives. And we wanted to talk to Tamika because my good friend Kenny told me that you represent somebody that might just be able to bridge the gap. So we are happy to have you on Higher Learning today, Tamika.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I am not related to Kenny. We just met on a fluke through another friend, and we just hit off, and he's just been such a great support. And so I was like, I want to talk to Van and Rachel. And he was like, let me send a text message. And so that's how this all happened.
Yeah. Well, we are happy to have you.
Very happy to have you. So I told her earlier, but like before we did the podcast, I told her that I have a bone to pick with Sacramento, and I'll tell you what that bone is. You guys poisoned Kobe. I don't think we forgot. Kobe Bryant, if you guys don't remember, Kobe Bryant ordered room service. He ordered a hamburger back in the day. I think it was definitely the Western Conference Finals, Lakers versus Sacramento Kings. And Kobe got sick from a hamburger that he ordered in a hotel in Sacramento. Look, I know that the people in Sacramento poisoned Kobe. I know you guys did.
Van, look, I was not here. I had nothing to do with that.
There you go.
So, you know, Rachel, I'm going to need you to help me out on this. If I wasn't here, there was nothing that I could do.
Don't even respond to that mess. Don't even. You will, every time as I see we somebody, continue this podcast, you will learn not to do that. Just
right, know, right, right. We know what happened. Right now, know what happened.
I thought Van was going to give me, you know, he was going to help me out. But no, he won't start off something I can't do nothing about.
All right. So let's talk about this. Obviously, we're dealing with a constituency, which is Black Americans, that tend to vote heavily Democrat. Now, me, I am not a Democrat. I'm a liberal. I'm one of those far left wackos that they warn you about, Tamika. All right. So
but you don't have blue hair.
See? Stereotype. But here's the thing. I guess my thing is, I, as a black man, haven't seen any reason to vote for the right. And as much as we hear Blexit rhetoric from, you know, Officer Tatum, from Candace Owens, from even my friend Maj Ture, I haven't seen the Republicans give anything to Black Americans that really is compelling that would make me want to vote for a Republican in state or in a national election. Right. If you were selling that to me, black guy from Louisiana, why should Black people trust or invest into the Republican Party?
So what I will say is that, one, I totally understand what you're saying. That is a sentiment that I have heard for the past 3 years when I started running, because I ran for the first time in 2020. That was my first one out the gate. And a little bit about me is that I am an Air Force sergeant. I've been in for 20 years. My husband's a police officer. We have 5 children. And I am a transplant from on the East Coast. And we came here almost 10 years ago. And, you know, I was raised by my grandparents. My grandparents were veterans. My grandmother's cleaned houses for a living. I was as young as 5, remembering cleaning floors in some of my classmates' houses, some of these rich people's houses. And one of the things that I always go back to is that we don't see Republicans. We did not see them growing up. They didn't come to our neighborhoods. You know, they weren't asking us for their vote. And so what you're saying is that, you know, you don't have a relationship. And then on top of that, they're not giving you anything to make you think that they're the right choice. And when it comes to politics and you voting their way. But what I will say is that, and one, I'm sorry. And two, that's why I'm coming here to make up that difference. I can't speak for the Republican Party. I can only speak for Tamika. And one of the biggest things that I've done is everything that I could to show that I care about the everyday life, everything that affects our everyday life, you know, like from the gas that's so high in California, making those life decisions at the supermarket. I'm on one income, like so many of those moms in our area that are just trying to make it. And right now, if you look at what's happening in California, it is a direct reflection of what's happening in America, where Democrats have totally taken over and they're not showing they're not giving us the utopia that they promised. And we don't have balance. And that's why it's important for people like me to exist in this space so that we can bring balance to politics. And one of the things that I always talk about is like, this district was 29% registered Republican. I got 46% of the vote because I wasn't afraid to go and talk to people. I've never met a stranger. My grandmother always had us on the road helping people. And I put 100,000 miles in my car. And I think that we're doing something really special here and showing that there's an opportunity here for change and that you can trust someone that's going to bring you transparency, that's just like you, that is trying to make it just like everybody else. And I think that that's like the starting point for Republicans and bridging that gap.
So to piggyback on a little bit of what Van was saying about being Black, being a Republican, if you are elected, you will be the only Black woman Republican in Congress. So yes. I guess with that, a lot of Black people don't vote for Republicans because they don't feel like Republicans help the community. If you are elected and you are representative as a Black woman in Congress, that's a Republican. What do you want that presence to represent? And then what will you do to represent, I guess, Black women, Black people, and how will you help the Black community?
So I'm already doing that. I'm already doing that by reaching across the aisle, talking to people that normally wouldn't vote for Republicans, because we gear everything towards the independent and Democrats. Because for us, I think that we're all on the same page. We just want to be able to send our kids to a good school, be able to go on a vacation, be able to make enough money to take care of our children's future, like the basics. And that's what I'm going to champion when I get there. You know, right now, people are making life decisions at the gas tank, and that's under the Democrats. Right now, what's happening in our nation is that people are being outpriced in home, not being able to buy a home and here in California. And it's getting worse and worse and worse with the economy. The biggest thing is that we have to see freedom from a different lens. Is it right that we get a taxes taken out of our paycheck, but then we can't see where it's going to? Our children should have school choice. California is dead last almost every single year when it comes to education. Who is that affecting? That's affecting us. It shouldn't be this thing where it shouldn't be you're going to school according to your zip code. If you can get to the school, you should be able to go. And we're falling behind in education. That's what I want to push. I want to talk about police reform. My husband's a police officer. We talk about it all the time that there needs to be some changes made. We need to have more community involvement. People shouldn't be strangers that are policing your area. These are things that are so important that I believe that my presence would bring a change and a difference because I'm not afraid to talk about it. You know, no one tapped me on my shoulder and said, oh, Tamika, go and run. This will be a good thing. I was sitting in my house with my husband. We were talking over for months. I was 14 years active and I decided to get out. But then the policies that were happening here in California drew me out. And I was just like, I got to do something because I have 5 kids. And anyway, long story short, the biggest thing is that I'm already doing it. I'm showing that there's that there's somebody that they can trust. I'm already Black, so I can't like escape that. Yeah. I'm already right. Black, so I can't escape that. But you know, I was raised by my grandparents. I have a story that resonates with a lot of people. I mean, you already know grandma saved lives. My grandma died like a week before the primary. And so she knew what I was doing and she was just always encouraging. But
sorry for your loss.
the biggest thing is that Black people have the power to shift and move things in this country. We saw it in 2020. And all they need to do is get more informed. They don't need to get tired. I do not think that it would do us any justice to stay quiet in these midterms and even in 2024 because of what's happened this year. This year should have been a wake-up call. Joe Biden's administration tricked us into thinking that he was going to do something that was different than last time, than the last administration. And I think that that Black people have an opportunity to show their strength and vote another way. And again, it just starts with making those relationships. I always tell people, like, oh, Tamika, you're a Black Republican. Won't you get out? I was like, won't you get out there? I'm already doing my part. They need to see you.
So I'm going to come back to school choice and yes. a couple of things a little later on. And we're going to come back to Joe Biden in a second, too. But I want to ask you something. Your husband is a police officer, and you talked about everyday issues that affect Black Americans. When I was growing up, an everyday issue that affected me was policing. I am not a criminal. I've never in my life been arrested. You know, I came from a very stable home. I didn't have to take those penitentiary chances, and I didn't. I have, however, Tamika, mm-hmm. been handcuffed on 4 different occasions. Once, when I was standing in the driveway of my very own home, doing homework, police handcuffed me. So I understand it needs to be police reform. Reform to me is a word that has been defanged. I don't think it means anything anymore. So what I would ask you is, there are ways to hold police departments accountable for some of these things. And one of them is qualified immunity. Mm-hmm. Qualified immunity is something that we've talked about a lot on this podcast that will let a police officer be directly responsible for any mistakes that he or she might make on the job. Mm-hmm. If you want to see police held accountable for the wrongdoings that they have, if you want to see something more than oversight, if you want to see actual punishment, if you want to see police officers held to a standard, where do you stand on qualified immunity?
So what I would say is that qualified immunity is something that my husband and I, we talked about before. And, you know, one of the things he said to me is that, you know, police officers, if they felt that that they were going to, especially the good officers, they need protection as well. I'm an advocate for police being able to be held accountable. Like, I think people should be held accountable, but I also think that we need to really understand like what it means to scale back on qualified immunity and what that really means. And I think it's like just painted with the broad brush saying like, oh, like we just need to get rid of it, when there are police officers do need protections. But we need to maybe go back and tweak what those protections are and make it easier for us to prosecute police officers that do the wrong thing. Just like in the military, under the VA, you know, there was a time where it would take the act of Congress to get rid of somebody in the VA. But then when President Trump came into office, he took some of those, he allowed it to where protections out so that we could get those bad people out. Because, you know, as much as I do, that veterans deserve to be supported and protected. But at the same time, if they're not doing their job, if people are not doing their job in the VA, then they don't need to be there collecting a pension and being on for 30 years. And so that's what I want to do. I want to see what those protections are. And I want to make it to where, you know, if they do something wrong, that they are prosecuted. And one of the things I do want to add, if this is okay, is that I want to build that relationship. And my husband always talks about like police officers should, because he was a DC cop too. And he was always talking about how like he would go into the neighborhoods because he was in 6D, which is one of the worst at the time. It was like just 10 years ago, like one of the worst, like, you know, from a crime perspective, the districts in DC. And he's always saying like, if you just talk to the kids, if you just talk to these people, get to know them, it makes a difference. But when you don't come in there, when you don't know them and you don't know grandma up the street, you know, that's where the problems come in. So that community, and now everything's so polarized, it's like, oh my gosh, we just got to get back to people like you and I being able to have these conversations and actually take these conversations and putting them into action. You know, it's one thing for us to sit and talk about it, but then I'm going to go out and say that I'm saying this on a world stage. I'm saying this in my community. I say world stage, but, you know, like when I go talk on other shows like this.
Rachel, will you allow me one follow-up?
Sure.
Just real quick. Okay. So I actually disagree with your husband. And I'll tell you why. For a couple of reasons. Number one, because I knew a lot of the cops in my neighborhood, and I think that knowing the cops helps, I think it helps them more than it helps us. Because I think the police officers knowing who we are, I think it helps them get leads to cases. I think it helps them get stats. I think it helps them understand where the safe pockets in the neighborhood are. I think it helps them understand the lay of the land. It's definitely better for police officers to know the community because it helps them in policing, right? So I think that's very important. There was a guy on Instagram a little while ago, and I made the mistake of championing this guy. What he would do is he would go into places in Ohio and he would rap with the kids. He would rap with them. He would rap and he would dance and he would go in there. He would do all of this stuff. I'm like, look, that's great. A year and a half ago, something like that, there was a video of this guy showing up to the scene in the altercation and straight up walloping someone, punching him dead in the face. You see, all the rapping and stuff was cool. That actually is important, and I want to like in any way minimize that. My point is, there is no such thing as a profession that doesn't have guardrails or consequences when they make grave mistakes. Doctors have very, very intense, necessary, high risk, high stress jobs. Doctors who keep us alive, but see, if you go into a doctor and he puts your brain where your heart is, you can sue that guy. There's something that he can have his stuff taken away from him. So my very direct question to you or anyone who's against taking away qualified immunity is why? What type of protection does a police officer need that allows him to dance around culpability? When we're talking about people's lives, these guys have guns.
Yes, they do.
And we've seen before that, like, that there's really no way to control what it is that they do. So what I'm asking is, where's the hesitation in qualified immunity? The people we're talking about protecting are Americans.
Right. Well, my thing is that my husband, and I'm not saying because he's my husband, but my husband is one of the good guys. And there are people out there that will want to sue police officers for every single thing under the sun. He's encountered it as, you know, on his time, you know, oh my gosh, I'm offended, you know, and then, oh, boom, let's just do a lawsuit. I'm not
but
saying
you that's know that's not what we're talking about.
I know that's not what we're talking about, but we're talking about qualified immunity. Yeah. You know, that's what we're talking about. You're talking about this guy. And one thing I want to say is that we live in TikTok, Instagram world. Him bouncing around, I'm just adding commentary to what you said. I don't know this. I've never seen this cop. But one thing I will say is that just because somebody bebopping on TV or on the internet does not mean a relationship with the community. And one of the things that really needs to be addressed and overall is like de-escalation and how we decide to talk to people. And that goes across the board. And my husband talks about that too. And maybe one day you could have him on and you might like him, but you know, you might, but, and I'm really sorry that that happened to you, going back to your story. But anyway, let me answer the question. I get what you're saying, and we're going to disagree, and that's fine. But I do think that we need to look at what it is that's under those provisions for qualified immunity and things that make it hard to hold cops accountable. Then those are things that we need to talk about. Those are things that we need to discuss. Those are things that we need to make a conscious effort to change. And I don't know if you remember Senator Tim Scott, he wanted police reform, put forth a bill, and then the Democrats wanted to table it.
Because of qualified immunity.
We just got off Tim Scott. You should listen to the last podcast. Tim Scott's one of the biggest obstructionists out there in terms of police reform. Tim Scott isn't doing anything. Tim Scott doesn't want police reform. Tim Scott ain't with us on vote. I'm gonna let Rachel go though. We'll come back to that.
Yeah.
I don't know every single thing in the bill. So I'm gonna be clear. But what I'm saying is that when you put something forth as a bill, you know, people are going to go through it. They're going to try to make their changes, but there was at least something out there that said that, okay, let's try to make a change. We hear the outcry of America and let's try to make a difference. That's what I'm saying. Like there was,
but I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
You're fine.
Cause Tim Scott did put out a bill, but it was in response to the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act, which had qualified immunity in it. Tim Scott's bill didn't have that in it. And that is the question that I was going to follow up with you on, because I did see a retweet that you did in reference to that and saying that the reason that the Dems didn't want that bill to pass and they used the filibuster is because they didn't want the Republicans to get credit for a police reform bill during an election year, which we can get into that later. But yeah. Because you are running for Congress in yes. California, I want to be more specific. I want to know, would you support, if you were in Congress, would you support the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act? And you speak that you're for police reform. What does that specifically look like for you?
Okay. So for me, the George Floyd bill, I don't know everything. I don't know the bill. So I'll be honest with you. Like, I don't know the bill. So I would have to, I could come back and we could talk about the bill.
I actually appreciate that answer, by the way. Just like there might be people that there might be people that bang on you for that. But for me, hearing a politician say the Bill Clinton one time was asked during an MTV forum what he thought mm-hmm. about gangster rap music. And the most powerful answer he could give was, I don't know. He's like, I'd have to look more into it and really give you an example. So I actually appreciate the answer that you're not quite sure of what's going on. Because at least you're being honest.
Right. So, like I said, I'll come back. If you ever want to have me back on, we could talk about it. The second part of your question was what I wanted to do with police reform. And one of those things that I always think about is one, these stories that I've been watching a lot of documentaries and reading a lot of stories about situations just like Van was talking about, where police officers are just coming up to people, handcuffing them, you know, you look like somebody, or we think, you know, this happened.
Yeah.
And that's wrong. I'm sorry. It just makes me, cause I've been watching these stories where people are just getting locked up for 20 years and they didn't do anything wrong, you know?
Right.
And so they did not do anything wrong. Life gone, life lost. And it's our Black and brown brothers and sisters, like mostly men. But so for me, it's retraining, it's community. And I understand, Van, what you're saying, you know, you don't agree with the community part of it, but for me,
but I just think that we have to have the other part too, but yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And I understand that part, but it's going to be retraining, you know, in some areas where people lack, it's going to be that de-escalation again. Like, these are things that I believe that if we are but that goes back to community as well. It goes back to that training. It goes back to that human side of it. And actually right now I really feel that, because the polarization, because people aren't talking, we have to make an effort to push. And this is something I do here. I have talks. I like do town halls. I've done town halls in the past 2 years talking like police officers in the community coming together to have a conversation so that we can start breaking the ice. And so we can stop being against each other or even appearing to be against each other. So for me, it's the de-escalation. It's the retraining if we need it, you know, and that goes back to, cause people are like, well, they want changes, but a lot of changes cost money. And then we have to also, the biggest thing is retraining. I'll be honest with
you. What about taking the money away from, changing their budget, decreasing their budget?
Depending on what you're taking it from. When you're taking a budget away from the police, you're also saying that, what if there's underserved communities that are going to be affected by that? Like in my husband's district, for example, there's only 5 police officers. They want to hire more, but they don't have the money to do it. You know, it's not affecting their salaries. What it does is takes away from, you know, training or resources that they might have. You might lose a school resource officer because of it. And right now, schools need it now more than ever. I can't tell you how many death threats or bombs or whatever, you know, have been called into schools and they need police presence. You're taking away from communities. And who has the money for police protection? Not Black communities.
Let me ask you a question though.
Yeah.
Down here in LA, and then I'll move on to something else because we're staying on policing a little long, but this is kind of getting into the school choice economic thing that we talked about. Here in LA, there was the LA USD cut the police budget by $25 million and redirected that money into a $36.5 million Black Student Achievement Plan. See, to be transparent with you, I think it actually sells communities short by saying that what they need is more police necessarily. I think these communities, if they had more investment into them and mm-hmm. some revitalization, could actually do with less police, more people to work mental health, more people to work social aspects and things like that. They don't need to be police. They need a little tender, loving care.
Well, I don't think that it's necessarily about being policed. I'm saying that when you're taking the money away, are we taking away from those underserved communities?
Well, you said less police. They're going to have less police officers.
Yes, they will be.
And,
less,
I, and, I, And I don't think less police officers is necessarily a bad thing. If
but look
you're,
at LA right now. Look at LA right look, now.
LA right now, when you look at LA right now, first of all, we had Cerise Castle on this podcast to talk about that. The crime in LA might be slightly higher this year than it was last year. But the reality is, overall, crime in LA has been trending down for a very, very long time. And crime in LA overall is down pretty much. I think that we're overstating a little bit how safe it is to be or to not be in Los Angeles. But what I'm telling you is that I think there's a difference of opinion fundamentally that what you need to make sure these communities have any type of harmony is policing. They need a lot more things.
Yes, they do.
They need environmental changes. They need nutritional changes. They need mental health changes.
Right. And right. They have food deserts and all that.
Food deserts, right.
But there's food deserts. But all that. But I don't think that. I think that that also should come back with what is the city doing? What are our local leaders doing with the money that they receive, and helping make those changes in the community. I understand that's I don't want to say the word symbolism. I don't think that's the right word, but I understand like, okay, we're going to take from this because we're saying that we're hurt from because police did X, Y, Z, and they could be very valid, right? Some police officers made some bad decisions. And so we're going to pull away and we're going to give to this. But at the same time, if you have less police presence and like I said, we'll disagree on this. We're still going to have issues in communities as a whole. If there's things that are happening in this less time response, right? Then I go back to budget. We in California, we have a surplus. We have billions of dollars of surplus. And I'm like, hold up, that means you took more taxes. Where's that money could have gone into education. That money could have gone into those communities that we know that are underserved and they need help. And they need those community centers. They need to be able to have after school programs. They need to be able, like, I always dreamed of like being able to set up something to where, and I know for me, like when I was growing up, I would love to learn how to swim, you know, younger at a younger age. I learned how to swim as an adult, but can you imagine if those YMCAs, those community centers were fully funded and had people there to teach our kids how to swim or tutoring, and the parents didn't have to pay. My parents couldn't afford to pay for that stuff. My parents couldn't afford music lessons. You know, I was just, you know, none of that stuff. That's what needs to happen in those communities. And a lot of that goes back to putting the local leaders on the spot with where's the money going. You know, that's why people, I always encourage people to get involved in your local politics, because you will see where the money is going. Just like when we talk about the homeless problem, we have the highest homeless veteran population here in California, highest homeless-ish population in California. And why is it that we're throwing all this money at it and nothing has changed? We need an audit on what is going, how the funds are being allocated. And if these programs aren't working, then we need to make a change. Because who wants to walk down the street with their children and someone's defecating in the streets? That is happening in San Francisco. I go down there often. It is happening.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I think that like, I'm with you that we need a balance of the two for sure. And I'm all for it. But I also believe that less presence hurts us as a whole. And, you know, I just, when we see the smash and grabs, there was not enough people to respond to that. I don't know. You know, I don't know.
Well, they wouldn't. They might have not been smashing and grabbing if they had money in their pockets. You know what I'm saying? We're gonna go round and round and round. Of course, they're smashing and grabbing. They might have not been smashing and grabbing if there were options for them. But let's get off this real quick because I want to change it to CRT. Something that I know that you love talking about. if you do win your race up in Sacramento.
I will win my race. Okay.
When you win your race up in Sacramento, I'm not going to hear about you keeping Toni Morrison books out of schools up there, right? I'm not going to hear that George Johnson, all boys aren't blue, can't be taught. I'm not going to hear that you're against Americans learning the ins and outs of the racial dynamics in schools, right? I am not afraid.
I don't think that we should be afraid of our history at all. I don't think we should be afraid of our history.
Where's the butt?
I didn't say a but.
Oh!
No, she's got to say something. No. Let her know she's got to say something.
Okay. I'm trying to Tamika, I want to be friends.
We already are friends.
I know. So I'm looking for something that we're going to completely agree with. And I'm looking for.
I do not think that we should be afraid of our history. The only thing for me is that we should not be making our children. Look, I don't think that children should be taught that they're bad people because of such and such.
No, Tamika! No,
Tamika, you lost us!
Tamika!
Tamika!
Tamika! Tamika! We were almost there!
We were rooting for you!
We were rooting for you!
Rachel,
go ahead, finish your point.
Wait.
Okay.
Look now. I don't think we should be afraid of our history. I think that is one of the biggest missteps the Republicans have done in the past year, because I'm gonna be honest with you, when I see some of these interviews and they're like, I don't even know what CRT is, and I'm like, okay, so then what are we actually looking for? Okay,
yeah,
all I'm saying is that, and you guys are so funny, and you're gonna have me back on, is that I just want to make sure that, and you already know that there are some teachers out there, and don't try to say that that's not true, there are some teachers out there that are trying to make white children and black children become divided over this issue.
No.
And I'm not saying that there's all perfect, and I'm talking about how we present this. I'm talking about how we present this.
Right.
We can talk about slavery. We can talk about the founding fathers. We need to talk about how black people built this nation, came from a country we did not know and built this nation.
Okay.
We need to talk about that.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry that it's something that people don't want to talk about because of the polarization, or they feel like I wasn't the slave owner, you know, that rhetoric, like, oh, I wasn't the slave owner, you weren't the slave, so let's not talk about it. No, mm-hmm. We do need to talk about it. And it's okay to talk about it, but I don't want to talk about it in a way that makes somebody feel like, oh my God, I'm the direct reason. That's what I'm talking about. That's all I'm talking about. That's just like, you are not the direct reason. That's just like me trying to blame me and Van Dayton, and Van is the direct reason why I don't like black men. Like, no.
We talked about this on the podcast.
Listen,
it's Tamika.
That's all I'm saying. That's all
Tamika. Is systemic racism a thing of the past or the present?
I believe that we have people that do not do the right thing, and that has caused there to be an inequality in some of this some institutions. I do. Like, I'm the only black woman on the Republican side. I will tell you that running has been quite a story, because people will sit there and try to tell me that racism does not exist. And it does. It does exist. Do I think that America is a racist nation? No, like, America is not a racist. Do I think that they're racist?
How are we not a racist nation?
Van, are you racist?
Huh?
No.
Actually, I don't know. I'm not sure. But I don't think I am. But I can't be sure.
There are bad people in all walks of life, all walks of profession, trying to pull people down.
I know, but when we say America isn't a racist nation, the way I define whether or not something is something is from its present and its inception, right? So right now. So from its present and its inception, right? So if I look at America right now and I see tons of inequalities that are based upon that are racially based, I look at that and I go, oh, well, that country right there has a race problem. Now, if it just developed a race problem, I wouldn't necessarily say that that country is a racist country. Hey, maybe there's the wrong wrong regime that's taken hold, or maybe there's the wrong whatever that's taken hold. But if a country has always, Tamika, always had a race problem, I mean, racism in America is older than America. There's slavery ruled in America before America was a country. So if a country has always had a race problem, I just have a problem saying it's not a racist country.
Right. Tamika asked it in an individual way, but it's talking about the institutions that are in place, the things that run this country from its inception to now are racist.
Come on, Tamika.
We have race issues in America. I'm we are literally living race problems in America right now. Yes, sure. I do agree with that. We're not going to disagree on that. But guess what? You and I, all three of us, we can make a difference. There is still hope.
And I agree. I agree. This is what we're fighting for.
For me, like mm-hmm. we're talking about, we got Joe Biden sitting up in the White House. My mom says sitting up in the White House. Made these promises for us.
Right.
And last week he was asked a question about if he was going to what has he done? What is his, you know, next thing for us, right? And it has, I think he was like, has he talked to his like leader? I'm gonna paraphrase. So I'm not quoting him verbatim. So don't be trying to come back. Look to me.
Right.
And he said he got to talk to some more people. 50 years. What else does he have to talk about? He's supposed to know what needs to be done. He has all these people to make the difference. And what I'm getting to is that the Democrats have said that they have the answers. They have the House. They have the presidency. They got presidency. They got the Senate. They got the House. They got everything. And here in California, they have it. They have it all. You do not need to pass a law here in California mm-hmm. with the Republican. Right. I don't know if you know that. In California,
we do know.
Okay. Yeah. And what changes have been made in education for Black people? I don't know if you've seen those articles where Black children can't pass a standardized test. And instead of them making the effort to make those changes and to help them, they want to lower standards, get rid of D's and F's versus saying, let's come in and help. That is like the express definition of forgetting about us.
Yeah. They're too busy buying tanks for the police. Now, I think school choice is not going to help those Black schools either, by the way. I think telling all the Black kids that would be going to Hamilton that they could just go to Beverly. I definitely don't think school choice is the answer there. But I'm going to ask you one last question because, Tamika, you've been an amazing sport. And although we disagree, I'm going to tell you something. I get the sense that you're a good human being, which I cannot say for a lot of the people that I'm running across right now on the right. I'll be honest with you. I think we have some disagreements, some fundamental disagreements that might allow me to have you over for dinner before I voted for you. But I think
you would vote for me and you would have me over.
I think that we could work. I think that you're the type of person I feel like I could work with. So this So the interview is a success, but I'll ask you one last thing. You've mentioned Joe Biden a couple of times. Joe Biden ran on a couple of things. Number one, Joe Biden ran on voting rights, ensuring voting rights for Black people. Joe Biden ran on the violence, the Justice and Policing Act. Okay. Biden ran on the Build Back Better plan. The Build Back Better plan, which has several provisions in it, especially the $3.5 trillion version of the Build Back Better plan, of course, as soon as it got trimmed down to there was two versions of the Build Back Better plan. It was like the Al Roker before and after. The big Build Back Better plan, the big Al Roker plan had all kinds
big
of
Big Luther, Little Luther.
Big Luther, Little Luther.
That's what it was.
The little one, they had to trim a lot of stuff that would have helped people out. All three of those things that have provisions in them, one that has provisions in there for Black people, and I'm not a huge fan of the president. I've said the people that listen to this podcast know this. One, two that are specifically for Black people are being blocked by your party. They're being like Manchin isn't allowing some of the stuff to go forward, but the Republicans are filibustering voting rights and police reform. You are a Republican and Black people look at that and can't help but feel like the Republican Party is at cross. We haven't even gotten into reproductive rights. We don't have enough time. We haven't gotten into reproductive rights.
I need to come back.
We haven't gotten into we haven't gotten into any of this stuff.
There's Black a lot. People look immigration, at the Republicans, healthcare, there's
immigration,
a lot.
Healthcare, all of that stuff.
Yes, all of
but
that.
Just on these issues that they campaigned on that were specific for black people, the Republicans don't want voting rights legislation. How in the world are we supposed to make sense of that? How can we reconcile that as Black people?
Okay. So let me, I need to come back because that's like another, that's another 30 minutes. And I'm going to send you some stuff too. Okay. If that's okay.
And yeah, I'm down with the literature. This is higher learning, baby.
Okay. Yeah. and then you send me some stuff too. You send me some stuff. I'm going to send you some stuff. But
I'm going to send you some stuff by my favorite author, Karl Marx.
Rachel, how do you deal with this man?
I don't. See, I have learned the art of tuning Van out. And you come back, Tamika, you will soon learn that as well.
I would say one of the biggest things that I really appreciate about both of you is that this opens up dialogue that America is missing. You guys are, it really is. I know you probably think, just my little podcast. Well, I don't say little, because you know, Black people, we get something people call it little real quick.
Right.
Like, why are you doing that? Like, no, this is my podcast. Like, nigga. But we have an opportunity to talk about like the things that matter most. And for me, it's like getting back to the basics, getting back to what it, the essence of who we are. And that's our freedom. That's believing in God. I apologize if, you know, for those that don't, but it's about the family structure. It's about getting back to, you know, being able to live a life and be free, and being free looks different for everybody. But right now we're at a point right now in our nation that Americans cannot live a life that they want to live because of the overreaching government, the high freaking taxes, gas prices are through the roof. I'm making life decisions at the gas tank because we got $5 gas out here. And there's so much that needs to be worked on. And I just want to be a part of the solution. And I'm just a regular person. I'm a mom of five. I'm just a regular woman just trying to do the best that I can for people. And these kinds of moments are special because it's bringing us back together. And so, and this was so desperately needed, even, you know, though we might not always agree. And, you know, one of the things I will say, and then I'm gonna let, and then I know you guys got to stop, you know, stop the recording, but when you find out new information, I think that it's so important to come back and be like, look, my mind is changing. There's so many things about me have changed in the past 3 years because of what I've learned. And one of the biggest things with politicians, I feel like instead of them saying, you know what, you know, I was wrong on this, they double down. You know, their heels. And so that's, I'm bringing the leadership that I've learned that as a leader, you have to be able to move and change as you get new information and do the best you can to help people. And for me, it's having those conversations with people that are on the other side, but I don't really think, Van, you and I are of that much different.
Tamika.
I think we'll think more alike than you probably won't admit. But anyway, I just really, really appreciate all of you, for giving me this opportunity. And I do want to come back on because like all of that, the latter end of the conversation, that's like another 30 minutes.
Sure. No, we'd be lucky to have you. Happy to have you come back on because, you know, a lot of times we get tired of just saying, hey, blah, 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 like scared. It's good to have conversations.
Absolutely.
Where you don't always agree. So you can, you know, see just how much more right you are than the other side. Now, for anyone that is captivated by you, tell them where they can come and get more Tamika Hamilton.
Okay, so you can go, he said, get some more Tamika Hamilton. VoteTamika.org. You spell my name Tamika. It's not with no C. It's not with a bunch of E's. You know, my mom's common spelling. Tamika for Congress on Instagram, Tamika Hamilton on Twitter. Uh-huh. And that's where you and I chit-chatted. But yeah, so I just, like, again, thank you so much.
No problem.
It's just all about having those conversations.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us, Tamika. That is Tamika Hamilton. You guys, she gave you all of her information. Put your think caps on and make sure you go out there and learn more. All right. We're going to come back. All right. She was good. What'd you think about Tamika? Would you vote for Tamika?
No,
I wouldn't vote for her.
But Tamika's nice and she's more than welcome to come back and we can hash some of this out. But yeah, she's lovely. She was lovely.
She's lovely. Look at it. Here's the thing. Is there a chance? How about this? At this point right now, I couldn't vote for Tamika. But if I was a politician, Tamika is the type of person on the other side of the aisle that I would love to have the opportunity to work with, because you would think that you would at least be able to get something done with somebody that was willing to listen to your argument. Now, I don't agree with a lot of the ideas, and you don't either, but maybe we can work together, you know?
Yeah, I could see why you would think, you know, you could at least have great conversations with her, but her hesitation in answering some answers lets me know that she would stand on the party line.
Yeah, sure.
And not cross.
And you know, I say I would have her over for dinner, but only her, you know. I can't have the police
the kids?
Come over to the crib. Nah, the kids could come, but her husband, the police. You know, so I don't know. Like, you know, I mean, everything around here is legal, I think. But he seems like a very nice guy, but I can't have him around here looking through shit. He might
plant something. Because that's what he would do.
You can't trust the police. He might plant something. They and he's from Sacramento too. They really, I'm serious about
that.
We
don't know if he's from Sacramento.
They poisoned Kobe for real.
Okay.
That's a true story. Okay. You don't believe me. Joe Rogan.
We got a name. When you laugh about something ridiculous that someone says, we got to name this segment.
Wait. I want to name this segment.
I knew it.
The name of this segment is it fucked up?
Okay.
So Joe Rogan was on his podcast. Joe Rogan, who is the second most notable podcast here at Spotify, second to Higher Learning, of course.
Clearly.
He was talking to Jordan Peterson, who I'm not going to explain who Jordan Peterson is. Either you know who he is or you're not. He's a big, big deal. And this conversation was had between the two of them. Donnie, roll the sound.
Depending on who you ask, either you're a voice of reason and rationality and personal responsibility, or you're a voice of intolerance and bigotry and anger and hateful.
That's okay.
Sexual oppression.
What did Michael
prejudice.
Eric Dyson call you? A mean, angry white man.
Yeah, and a mean, angry white man. Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not mean at all. Yeah, yeah. That's what's dumb about that statement. You're not mean at all.
I am white. Actually, that's a lie, too. I'm kind of tan. And he was actually not black.
If you're tan,
he was
what
sort
the fuck
of brown.
Am I? Because I'm darker than you.
Yeah, yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, but neither of us are white.
Well, I'm Italian.
And he was brown, not black.
Well, isn't that weird?
Yeah,
weird. The black and white thing is so strange because like the shades are
tan and brown.
There's such a spectrum of shades of people. Unless you're talking to someone who is like 100% African from the darkest place where they're not wearing any clothes all day and they've developed all that melanin to protect themselves from the sun. You know, even the term black is weird. And when you use it for people that are literally my color.
Donnie, that's enough. Is it fucked up, Rachel?
Absolutely. Two white men talking about what it is to be black is something that I never want to hear. I never want to hear that again. Just listen, like my skin was crawling just listening to them define to talk about the meaning of black. And you don't even have a black person sitting at the table. Now, I mean, granted, they could have had a Kamel and he might have jumped in on the conversation and been like, you're absolutely right. I'm not black. I'm a father. Is he a father? I don't know. A human being, whatever it is, a man, whatever it is he says. Anyways, it's absolutely fucked up. I don't listen to Joe Rogan. I don't know if you do. But it seems like lately he is constantly in the media for saying something problematic. And this one really got to me, talking about, what did he say? Unless you're from Africa, the darkest, what did he say? What's the quote?
The darkest place, the darkest part of Africa where people have to have melanin to survive.
And they're walking around naked. I mean, just the way that he's talking about the African people, describing what it is to be black, not even acknowledging that maybe I should have talked to someone who is black and they can explain to me why they like to be called black rather than assuming for themselves and saying what they want to be called. Okay, that's great for you, but can you understand the meaning of the word black? We literally had a conversation about African American and black on the last podcast, and we talked about what we would rather be called and why. being Black is more than just the color of my skin. It's symbolic. It connects me to my history, my heritage, my culture. Like, and I would explain that if I had a seat at the table. And I would hope that he would be open-minded enough to hear it. But instead, he wanted to speak on behalf of Black people and tell and say, quote, it's weird that we want to be called Black. Yeah. So offensive.
So, you know, Joe Rogan is the biggest podcaster in the world. And it's by, it's like when comparing podcasts, when you're talking to other podcasters and people who are talking about podcasts, like they throw Rogan out. Like we don't even talk about, the numbers are so crazy on the Joe Rogan podcast that it's such an anomaly. It's like Neo, right? If you're fighting everybody in the Matrix, you're thinking, oh, we're not going to give a fuck about Neo because if Neo shows up, it's over. I fight Morpheus, I fight Trinity, all the agents, stuff, whatever. So he's that big. He's huge. He's, in a way, I've heard comedians say that he is their Johnny Carson for this generation. Now, if people don't remember Johnny Carson, your career as a comedian used to be made when you went on Johnny Carson's The Tonight Show and did your bit. And it carried on a little bit into Jay Leno, was a little bit less significant. But they say that now that Joe Rogan is a career maker like that. A friend of mine went on Rogan, Jason Wilson from the Cave of Vidalum, the Transitional Training Academy down there in up there in Michigan. After he went on the Rogan show, his followers went up 150,000. So Joe Rogan is a gigantic, huge, huge thing. The reason why I say that is because we're having an ongoing narrative in America about how much cultural education the country actually needs, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. An ongoing dialogue about that. We're talking about it. We're talking about CRT. We're talking about certain books being taught in schools. And there's a faction of Americans that would say to you that we don't need it anymore, that we get the point. We understand. We got it. When I look at the biggest communicator in the landscape of podcasting, the largest communicator in the landscape of the podcast game, be so completely out of his depth when discussing race, culture, and even actually present day Africa. When I listen to somebody who I can, the top part of that started off pretty good. These guys, that's the complete American blueprint of ignorance, right? They don't think they're racist. They don't think they're sexually repressive. They don't think any of that, right? That's what they said at the beginning. All of that stuff is dumb. It sucks. It's bad. Mm-hmm. And then they go in to put those comfortable ethnocentric pajamas on and wear them as if they never took them off, right? Like they always are in them, right? Right. And I'm less mad about it than I am just vindicated. I like, okay, we like, for people that wonder why we are so adamant about having this education begin when kids are young, having this education begin where their minds are still malleable and pliable, we can still get in there. It's because it is. So now being Black is actually about whether or not you're from the deepest, darkest part of Africa where people don't even wear any clothes anymore.
Exactly.
So all of the history that I connect to being a Black man, what that word actually means, we're talking about Pan-Africanism, the Black power movement worldwide. We're talking about people who have defined Black is beautiful. I'm Black and I'm proud. Right. All of those things. All of that stuff has to do with, like, now they're saying it's the color of this iPad. And if you're not that, you don't agree with that. It's weird. It's a weird thing to do. On its face, if you're saying, hey, Black people aren't actually Black, there's something different than that. Well, no shit, dog. My sister looks about the same as you guys, but the word means more to us. And by the way, that might not be historically the best thing. It wasn't a word that we came up with, but at the same time, it carries a lot of weight now. And you would think that a guy that like Joe Rogan would show some sort of understanding or maybe even a little cultural deference to that. And the fact that they didn't was pretty telling.
Well, that's my thought. It's like, is that what happens on this show? Because you were just spewing this type of information out there without trying to understand a whole other side of it.
Yeah.
Just talking just to talk as two white men, when you can't relate at all to the Black experience or why people even want to be called that. That wasn't even a question. It wasn't even a, hey, I wonder why Black people call themselves Black. Maybe I should bring somebody Black on to talk about it.
Well, see, Rogan has, so the thing about Rogan is, and I think one of the things that makes this podcast fascinating is, I just told you that Jason Wilson was on the podcast, who runs a transitional training facility for Black and brown boys. And if you talk to Jason, I'm not sure how he felt about this. He's one of my mentors. I'm not sure how he felt about this particular clip. But going on Rogan was one of the biggest moments in his life, because it allowed the message that he had and support for the Cave of Adullam to go through the roof. So, I mean, you know, if you're familiar enough with Rogan, he has Black people on there all the time. Him and Dave Chappelle are like best friends.
I'm not saying he doesn't.
No, but the only thing I'm saying is that he's kind of like water a little bit. Like he has, like it. If he's on there with Jordan Peterson, this is kind of what you get. If he's on there with Jason Wilson, it's kind of going to be a little bit. And I think that's one reason why people, like, he's had Cornel West on there before. Mm-hmm. Like him and Cornel West had like an hour now. I listened to it. It was like an hour and a half, 2 hour conversation on the Joe Rogan podcast. So this was insanely ignorant though.
So like, you said he's like water. So does he just adapt to the whatever the conversation is, depending on kinda, who he's talking to? So they'll kind of.
He's not about, it's not a podcast where he's going to necessarily challenge you. He's trying to make sure that the conversation stays on a certain wavelength. For example, he had Candace Owens on there, and there were times that he disagreed with her, several times that he disagreed with her on the podcast, but he did it in a way that made her comfortable to continue to talk about. He never wants you to like clam up and stop communicating. That's kind of not how he runs his podcast. In this situation right here, though, this was a very collegial, a very polite, really, really racially insensitive and fucked up convo that he was mm-hmm. having right now. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. the as far as to limit our culture to our skin color, number one, you're not really Black. And then what he said about the continent of Africa is hovering around shithole country territory.
Right.
A little bit. Like,
yep, yep.
Yeah. Not the finest moment of the Joe Rogan podcast right there. All right. Look, let's go to mailbag. You know, we got a lot of other stuff we could talk about, but our conversation with Black Republican Tamika Hamilton was so good.
Yeah.
I think it's time to go to mailbag. Mailbag. Donnie, like, run the song. Mailbag time. Time to read your letters and then we'll reply to them. Oh, it's mailbag time. Write us with your queries and we'll chime in. Okay. Look, Donnie, we don't have a lot of time. Like, get the questions out. Go, 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 go. Mailbag time. Go, go, go.
Hey, all right. Real fast. Lola.Anthonia asks, move to a city with more Black people, but it's cold, or move to a city with no Black people, and it's always warm.
Okay, obviously we're going to be around Black people. We can keep each other warm. We'll be fine.
That's you. I live in the cold for nobody.
Okay. Okay.
Straight like that. You know what I'm saying?
You won't last long. You won't last long. I'm not
living in the cold for no one.
Well, you're going to be living in a cold world, being the only Black person there.
I'll figure it out. Look,
how many days y'all get banned in this world?
I'll figure it out. I literally will be Lisa Turtle for the rest of my life if it means living in a cold place. I'm not doing it. I'm never moving to the cold again.
I was Lisa Turtle.
You were Lisa Turtle. I'll be Lisa Turtle for the rest of my life. I look at you. I judge y'all for wrapping your fucking necks up in scarves and like putting on all those layers. I judge you guys.
Okay.
Like to go outside. You mean to tell me you want to go to the grocery store. Think about this. You live in the cold. You want to go to the grocery store. That's all you want to do. Just go to the grocery store. You got to put on an Averex jacket, a North Face. You got to put on a fucking sweater. You got to put on long johns get some oodles and noodles. I'm not doing all of that.
Instacart.
Whatever. I'm from Louisiana. I'm not. I came from here and I moved here. I'm not going to live in the cold, man.
Okay.
It's not for me.
All right.
Well, I'll make it work with them. What's the next question?
All right. Total_KO_57 asks, Did Rachel let her ex-boyfriends know she was going to talk about them in her book?
The ones I talked to, I did. Absolutely. I'm still cool with a couple of my exes. Now, the last one I had, we don't talk at all. So no. But I changed their names. Okay. There's a blurb at the top of the book that's like the names have been changed to protect the identities, and some characteristics have been changed as well. So
you know, I changed nobody's name. You know name who you are. Book.
Okay.
I changed nobody's name in my book. Like, so you tell me you pulled a Corinne Stephens?
No.
You did Confessions of a Video Vixen?
Our stories are not the same. No.
Like
our stories are not the same. I told stories of past relationships, sure.
Same thing she did. She told her truth to the whole world.
And that's what I did. And that's what you're going to do later this year, too.
Yeah, but I don't have any, like, what? See, I haven't read the book yet. Do you have, like, juicy ex-boyfriend stories in there and shit?
Yeah.
And you didn't tell them you were putting them in there?
Yeah. One of them was like, good. The one I'm cool with was like, great. I'm glad I could help you.
Did you? Cool. So there's one guy who's going to pick it up and like read about how much of a piece of his shit.
The way that he is, he was like, do not ever mention my name in public. Don't talk about me. He's never going to read it. No.
Did he go to the NFL?
His sister might.
His sister might. Did he go to the NFL?
Yeah.
How many years did he play?
You're not going to be able to deduce who this is just by.
You're out of your mind. He played at Texas. He played.
I didn't say he played at Texas.
Oh, okay. If I don't know the school, I can't do it. If I knew the school, I could definitely do it.
I'll give you Texas in 3 years, and that's it.
He played at Texas, and he played 3 years in the NFL. I'm gonna figure this out.
Actually, I think that's in the book, though. I actually think that's in the book. I don't know if I said the 3 years. If you figure it out, wait. If you figure it out,
I could easily. And you say you like big guys, right? So he was on the he was either on the D line, or he was on the O line.
It's going too far. Donnie, ask the next question. But seriously,
I could figure it out.
I want to. If you figure it out, we gotta put something on this. We gotta put something on it.
Oh, I don't know. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
Let the thought warriors come up. Come up with what we're going to put on this bet. I will figure it out, though.
But I will never publicly say who it is.
That's fine.
Next question. Thought warriors, don't even try it.
All right. Forever underscore yours, 422 asks, will we ever get an episode with Brian and Kalika?
Sure. Whenever. Yeah.
Easy.
We just got to plan it.
I got to be honest with you. Forever yours, 422. That's like not. That's really not what we're looking for in mailbag.
You know? No, that's a good question.
We're not really looking.
A good question. We've had family day. We said we were going to do sibling day. We got to do significant other day. So that's
we'll
a good
do
question.
It, but like it's that's coming. Too. It's not introspective enough for what I would consider mailbag to be.
You are really being picky today.
I'm saying. All right.
Fantastic question. Next question. Right.
This is a more introspective question. Caitlin underscore R underscore Kent. Ask if y'all met as kids, would you be friends?
Absolutely, we would have been friends.
I think so. I was always friends with the girls like Rachel in like when I was a kid.
Whoa! Who are the girls like Rachel? Describe the girls like Rachel.
Tremika Johnson.
Don't name them.
Melanie,
describe
Melanie,
them.
Tremika Johnson, Melanie Johnson, Angela Flowers. You know, the girls that came, they came from good stock. You know what I mean? They came from Rashonda Moncrief. You know, they came from a good family. Rashonda Moncrief's dad owned the radio stations. I always knew how to be friends with those girls. You know what I'm saying?
So you use them.
Not use them, because it wasn't nothing like that. It was almost like your dad, Sidney Moncrief, he owns the whole radio station joint. You got like a lake in the back of your crib? Hey, man, I'll tell you what, don't nobody fuck with her. I'll always be friends with you. Your dad's a federal judge? Like, do you know what my family, like, do you know what knowing a federal judge would be worth to my family?
My
Uncle Ray did 10 years straight fed time. Imagine if I could tell my Uncle Ray, yo, actually, I know a federal judge that might actually be able to make a couple of calls on your behalf.
You want my dad to lose his position?
No, I want your dad
to be impeached. You sound like, no, whenever we go to family reunions, my cousins are always asking questions like that. That's so funny.
Yeah, you know what? That's crazy, though. You know why that is? It's because we don't know no judges. Like, we don't know no judges. Like really, we might know one judge in the whole town. That was Janice Clark was a judge in the whole town. Every black person knew the same judge. But your daddy was a judge. We going to use that. I call him over parking tickets. You know, he's a federal judge.
He's like, above that. Should Joe Biden choose not to appoint or nominate a black woman? You know, Sam Lindsay's always available. You can go ahead and
wouldn't that be nuts if your dad went to the Supreme Court?
So probably when the Senate was figuring out to confirm him, they'd probably bring up all of my shit. Oh, that's your daughter? That's your daughter? Never mind. Never mind.
You have an unexpected ally of the week?
I'm going to go ahead and give it to Bravo for them getting rid of old Jenny. Because what's Jenny's last name? Is it Jenny Nguyen? I watched Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. I like Jenny on the show, but you never know the secret lives of people. And if you don't follow this, she is new to season 2 of Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. They unearthed some problematic social media behavior where she talked about Black Lives Matter. She called them thugs. She talked about running over rioters. The list goes on and on and on. Bravo made the right decision, I feel, in removing her as a cast member because it became problematic with her and the other cast members that were offended and the viewers offended by what she said. So, you know, Bravo to Bravo.
Yeah, I actually had the same thing. I didn't know anything about her, but I thought that taking that step was necessary. I think sometimes, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of people losing their jobs for things that they said, but I wouldn't want to be around her. Fuck all that.
Yeah.
All right. That is enough for today. Thank you for Tamika Hamilton for joining us today.
Yes.
Thank you to our producers, Donnie Beecham Jr. and Trudy.
No, Trudy Joseph. Thank you, Trudy.
Trudy Joseph. Thank you, Thinking Caps Off, for Do Not Stop Learning. I am Van Lathan Jr.
I'm Rachel Lynn Lindsay. Bye, guys.